Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Shea Adam is our VP Racing Pit and Paddock Reporter. Jeremy Shaw is in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre with me, John Hindhoff. Hello, everybody. If you are just coming back to your computer, your radio, or however you're consuming the 69th annual Mobile 112 Hours of Sebring, it's lovely to have you. If you've been in from the start, well done. Hope you're taking notes. We'll be asking questions at the end. Actually, we won't be asking questions at the end. What we will be doing is analysing what we've seen in Michelin post-race tech, because although the checkered flag is the end of the race, it's only the start of the conversation about the race. Anything that you have noticed or that you want to bring up, hashtag Michelin PRT to at IMSA Radio. You drive the editorial content of that show, which comes up after the post-race, after the checkered flag, and once we've had a chance to have some post-race interviews, we'll try and get a few more in that show as well. Still Van Zander by 20 seconds, and a pass there for, not for position, Pagenaud went past Loic Duval as he was coming back out the pits, Jeremy. Loic Duval, with that pit stop now again falling off the lead lap in the number 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac, the grey and gold car. He gets back on the lead lap whilst everybody else pits, and then when he has to take his pit stop, of course he drops back again.
Yeah, frustrating that. The number 31 car though, that's kind of solidly now just two laps behind, they've done a really nice job in that number 31 car to make up ground, because they were four laps behind the leaders. I was just keeping my eye on the two Acuras. Last time around, Olivier Pla been coming under increasing pressure from Alexander Rossi. Of course, Rossi's still trying to make up ground from that penalty they served about 45 minutes or so ago. He'd close up pretty much onto the tail of Olly Pla in the Meyer Shank racing car, but Olly Pla just responded by setting that car's fastest lap of the race on a 146.6. So that's kind of interesting. The fastest lap of the race has been turned by the number 31 car and the number 01 car at 146.151. So it's interesting to me to see that Meyer Shank car turning a good lap there, 146.6, at this stage in the proceedings.
Mauro Engel has just turned the SunEnergy 175 Mercedes AMG GT3 fastest lap of the race. Now, I mentioned this for no other reason. It's sitting in ninth at the moment and has lost a couple of laps on the cars around it, but that car's got no traction control. It was having issues with TC and ABS earlier on, but Mauro's got his head round it and he's driving that car as quick, in fact quicker, than it's gone any time in the race. He's just on 6/10 of a second away from the fastest GTD lap of the race in that car, and remember, it has been backed into the barriers at turn 6 as well. That is a sterling job by Mauro Engel, and proof were needed that the endurance spirit, Jeremy, is living on down at SunEnergy 1 and Mauro Engel.
Yeah, good to see, isn't it? That car's been fast all weekend. The Mercedes were both very, very quick, at Daytona. So it's going to be an uphill battle to get themselves into contention here, having lost that ground. But they're going to need some help. They're still, four laps, I think, off the ultimate pace now as a result of that incident. Because they were in a battle for fourth place with the Lamborghini of Frank Pereira and number 19 GRT Grasser racing car when they had an incident. But the car is still fast and they want to make their point. And of course, unofficially, it's Mauro Engel still does lead the season-long points in the GTD.
That's a good point. Yeah, that is a good point, well made, just being passed by the Ganassi Cadillac going under the Mobil 1 walk-over bridge. Svenja van der Zander then reeling off the laps. Van der Zander now being in that car. I mean, it amazes me. He's been in that car for 10 laps, and his average over the last couple of stints has been spot on the money. And there's no breaking yourself in with the guys at this level, is there, Jeremy? You know, when most people go to work, they have a bit of a chit-chat maybe as they're swiping in. Or you would have back in the old days, a bit different when you're working from home. Maybe a quick cup of coffee, turn everything on, settle yourself down, check the emails that have come in overnight. There's none of that. There's nothing like that at all goes on here. As soon as your thumb's off that pit lane speed limiter, and particularly for Renge van der Zander, he was right on the money when he came out and made the position, of course, as he came out of the pit lane.
Yeah, no hanging around. I mean, look, you know, we talked about it already. I mean, it's hard to imagine, given how bumpy the track is and how physical it is, both for the cars and for the drive and for the equipment. But it really is a flat, you know, it's a flat out race. I mean, you're not pushing to 100% all the way through the 12 hours of course, but you are pushing pretty hard, and a lot harder than you used to, not that many years ago, when you had to have be more cognizant about the longevity of the car, or the mechanical reliability of these cars. They're now remarkably stout, and problems will occur, but nothing like as many as you used to have back in the old days.
Barely keep up with all the tweets that's coming in, but I'm trying to bring up some of the points. Here's a question that I know part of the answer to, but not the other, so I'm going to throw the second part of this to you, Jeremy. James Brown, not that one, says, are my eyes playing tricks on me, or does the blue flag being waved on the start-finish straight have a yellow stripe on it? Yes, it does. He says, if it does, what does the stripe denote? Or do all blue flags in America have a yellow stripe? I think they all do, Jeremy, but I don't know why. Is there something specific that the blue, you are being caught by somebody quicker flag in America, has a yellow on? Because that doesn't happen anywhere else as far as I'm aware.
That's a good question, to which I can't think of the answer right now.
Maybe James, you've stumped Shaw.
Yeah, my brain is sort of engaged on other matters. I must admit, I hadn't thought about flags.
Right, if you know, at IMSA Radio, please. If you're a flagger in the States, and thank you very much indeed for all your hard work. Obviously not if you're on station at the moment, down particularly at maybe turn 7. Maybe not right now, but if you get a break, if it's at IMSA Radio, hashtag RSL Sebring, and let us know why the yellow. I think they all do have them. I don't think there's a different flag. I think they all have the yellow stripe.
It does say in the rule book, though, John, rule 27.10.blue, the blue flag may incorporate a yellow diagonal stripe. So it does acknowledge that there are two different varieties that might be used across the different racetracks that we go to.
But it means the same, doesn't it?
The Texas Sports Car Championship.
But it means the same. It is the somebody catching up with you flag. There's a faster car behind you.
And 27.10.3 says that the blue flag is advisory and is not considered a command flag.
Yeah, well, yes. Unlike Formula One, whereby it's three flag points and then you get an exploding tortoise thrown at you or something.
That's Mario Kart.
All right, okay, sorry. Yeah. All right. Hard to tell apart sometimes, really. I'm only joking. It isn't advisory in Formula One. You must pull over or you will be penalised. If you know why that yellow diagonal is on, then let me know at IMSA Radio. If you're a corner worker, a flag marshal, flagger in the States, flaggers who may wave flags but never flag themselves, they are always full of energy. Thank you very much to our white-suited or yellow-suited armies around the world. And let us know, where did it start? where did that yellow diagonal start? Doesn't happen everywhere. Certainly not here in Europe. It's just a plain blue flag. All right, coming down to Living on a Prayer in 30 seconds or thereabouts. Yes, absolutely. And as we lost one of the greats recently, with half the race gone, there's now exactly half still to go. 6 hours as we move into the second half of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championships, second round of the season. It is the 69th annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advanced Auto Parts. Shea Adam, Jeremy Short, John Hindorf with you and the action. Thanks for tuning in. RS2 around the world. WWOJ here at the track on 99.1 and Sirius 216 XM 392. A lot of people telling us they're enjoying the coverage on there around North America, either in their cars or listening at home while doing other things. So, Jeremy, we move. We are now closer to the checkered flag than we were to the green flag, second half of the race. And I still feel as though we're just getting warmed up here in some respects. We've seen a lot of action. There's a lot going on. Nobody's made a bid for freedom in any of the classes, really. Still all to play for.
Yeah, very much so. You're absolutely right. And we've now gone, 2 hours and 10 minutes since the last caution period. It's been a really interesting race. And, of course, yeah, we've still got the same cloud cover we had earlier on, perhaps a little bit more than there was at the beginning of the race. But the conditions out there are still really, really good. We've seen some great lap times on a pretty regular basis whenever cars have some clear track. But, you know, the next sort of major fluctuation in the race, we could have to wait until it goes dark. It's only 4:15, isn't it now? Almost 4:15 locally. So it's going to be another 3 hours or so before we have darkness. But you know, as the temperature drops, it's certainly going to be interesting to see which cars cope better with that temperature fluctuation than others. And I'm pretty sure that it will affect different cars in different ways. Just looking at the Mazda right now, it's running still in the second position. And that gap between first and second has stayed... hasn't increased much during this stint, and certainly not as much as it did during the last stint between the 0-1 of Renger van der Zander and Oliver Jarvis. Although actually I say that, when they came in before the last run of pit stops, it was 14 seconds between them. It's now 22, so it has gone out by a fair bit, probably half a second or a lap or so. The Cadillac is quicker than the Mazda, and then closing on both those two, inching closer to those to the second place car, is the pair now of Acuras, with Olli Plaas still running just ahead of Alexander Rossi. So it's the Meyer Shank Racing with Kerberger Jaden Acura car number 60, just ahead of the Konica Minolta Acura. It's the car, of course, that won the first race of the season at Daytona.
Other battles. Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
Beg your pardon.
That's all right. It's all right.
About a minute back from the two Acuras is Simon Pagenaud, who's not going quite as quickly as he was before, but that's fine. He's still comfortably on the lead lap. He's about 15 seconds or so ahead of the race leader on the racetrack, so not really in any danger of losing that lap. Then the number 5 car is one lap down. And the number 31 car, that's just come into the pits again for another pit stop. That's, I think, is pretty much on schedule for that car.
That was 20 laps for Conway, his second 20 laps did. What's interesting is, though, they put Pipo Durrani in that share, and so Mike's only done a double, everybody else did a triple. Is that right?
Pipo did a triple, Nasser did a triple, Conway did a double, and yeah, now they've put Pipo back in, so they are repeating perfectly split to the midpoint. Whether or not that means they're going to leave Mike Conway in for a double at the end, or if they're going to restart things all over again, because, hey, why not put people in for the end of this race? We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. So what's that about? The other thing that was significant earlier on when we were talking to Renger van der Zander, he was absolutely confident in the interview that Shea did with him that they had enough tyres to single stint the tyres all the way through. So enough new tyres, which I thought was pretty good. What did they start off with, Shea, at the start of the week in terms of tyre allocation?
23 right. Sets for the pro classes. 18 for LMP3 and GTD, 21 for GTLM.
So if you consider they would have started on a new set of tyres, they've done 8 pit stops. That's another 8 set of tyres, so that's 9. And you'll have at least another 7 or 8 pit stops to go before the end. So they've basically saved 16, 17 sets of that allocation to make sure that they can single stint all the way through. You don't actually save any time by changing tyres anymore, because you're allowed to fuel and tyre at the same time, which is the point that Nick was talking about earlier on. Interestingly, WEC went to that and is going back to the old way before, so that you are... I read the comments from Michelin on that, that they were quite happy with that because they like the endurance element of their tyres. And banging a new set on every time doesn't really showcase that, whereas giving the teams who can manage their tyre wear an advantage by basically not allowing you to change tyres while you're fueling. There you go. Across the line, another lap completed by Renger. It's a bit slow from Renger last time around, Jeremy. Bit of traffic, 151.8, but we don't read anything too much into that.
And no, he's been turning consistent laps in the 47s, John. Last few laps, 47.3, 47.4, 47. I'm actually missing the next one, but 47.8, the one after that. So, he's just pacing himself nicely and. Clicking off the laps at this stage in the race, he knows how far there is still to go, so he's not going to overextend himself. He's not going to put that car into any compromising positions, you would hope. That's the plan, at least. And he certainly seems to be sticking to it perfectly at the moment. The gap from first to second now out. It came down a little bit on that last lap because, as you say, he had a bit of traffic. So it was 20 and a half seconds last time around.
Keep our eye on that. Still a great percentage of the cars running, Jeremy, notwithstanding we have had some issues early on, but still plenty of cars circulating and pretty evenly spread out. We have, with Alcamel, we have the advantage of having a tracker on the timing. The marching ants, or the dancing ants, as Brian Till always calls it. And it's a pretty decent spread around the circuit at the moment. Not too much of that clumping that we often see.
True. And yeah, not many intense battles going on at the moment. Even the two Acuras, the DPI cars have spread themselves out a little over the last couple of laps, a couple of seconds between them now. But it's probably not the case in GTD.
Well, no. If in doubt, look at GTD. Something will catch you right there. 4 seconds between the Vassar Sullivan Lexus in fourth place and Ross Gunn, but Ross actually went past that car a little while. Actually, that's just come down. Oh, there we are. Catherine Legg is catching Spencer Pumpelly, having just done that car's fastest lap of the race. Team Hardpoint Porsche number 88, just 8 tenths of a second behind Spencer Pumpelly in the Magnus Acura. Well, Kat used to drive one of those NSXs, so she'll know where it's strong or not. So there's something that we might be able to keep an eye on. Ollie Platt has just pitted from the fourth position. And that again, another 21 lap stint. Absolutely metronomic there for the MSR with Curb Aghajanian Acura. Said this earlier in the week, and there's a few people have tweeted in at IMSA Radio using the hashtag RSL Sebring, seeing similar things. The colour changes on those Acura DPIs from the light colours that Penske ran to the darker shades, and some contrasting shades as well of the two teams who took over those cars this year, really show off the intricacies and the complexities, Jeremy, of the aero around the front of those Acura DPIs. It's a very, very clever design on the front of that car.
Yeah, pretty cool, isn't it? And I love the, you know, this whole DPI concept where the manufacturers that get involved in DPI are able to, you know, utilize some of their own styling cues or something, you know, something that distinguishes their car from everybody else's. I absolutely love it. And it is certainly interesting to see how different those cars look with these different liveries rather than the Penske livery we've seen for the last couple of years or so. So, yeah, fascinating about that. And, of course, let's not forget that the basic chassis of these, the Acura ARX05s, is the same as is on the LMP2, the standard LMP2 car. They're all built by Orica. That is basically the same basic chassis. So it just shows how different you can make these cars look. It's very cool.
Pit stop for one of the cars we were talking about there, as Alexander Rossi is in the pit lane and he's done his work for the moment. Gets out of the Konica Minolta Acura. Shea Adam.
Because I'm sure that Shelley Taylor is listening to us. Shelley, can you please go give your husband a big hug? I love it when things go as they're supposed to. Ricky Taylor did a triple. Philippe Albuquerque did a triple. Alexander Rossi did a triple. And now Ricky Taylor's getting back in. I love it when we can predict it like that. Beautiful stop, fuel, and four new tires. Not a moment wasted on the pit lane as Ricky Taylor goes back out for his next stint.
By the way, it was Dan Cameron that took over the other Acura, that's the MSR car from Jolly Plart, wasn't it, who brought that car in?
Yeah, 21 lap stint then for number 60 car, just 20 laps for the number 10 car, which is interesting. In fact, the last two stints of number 20 car have been 20 laps, whereas the 60 car has done an extra lap in each of those last two stints. So again, nothing significant at this stage at all, but certainly kind of a fun thing to keep our eye on. And I would expect to see the number 01 car and the 55. Actually, they pitted together on like 166 last time around, now competed 186. So the next one or two laps, I would expect to see the two leaders into the pit lane for their next scheduled service.
Well, yeah. Van der Sande, another 147.9. Is there a button on the steering wheel that, you know, he pushes to get the 47 whatever
something.
It is? It's extraordinary,
cool,
isn't it?
Yeah, very impressive. You know, he's now super experienced in these cars, as Renger. And you know, that's exactly why he was hired to drive this car, because he knows so much about them. He's got a lot of experience now in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and you know, he's one of the best drivers out there. This is his 71st start in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. 14 wins, 32 32 podium finishes, and of course, you know, he's just a super reliable character to have at the wheel of your car.
Different sounds of the engines as well with the DPIs. Another reason to like this Audi. Porsche already committed to coming in by 2023 as into the pit lane for the wins number 52 LMP2 car, and that was Scott Huffaker who brought the car in, but he won't be taking it out, Shea.
No, that is a driver change back to Mikkel Jensen, who was announced as being one of two full season drivers for this car along Ben Keating for the remainder of the LMP2 championship. And remember, that began, well, technically yesterday during qualifying when points were awarded for the first time. They're doing fuel tires and adding a little bit of fluid that looks like oil in that pressurized bottle in that compartment. Slow to remove the car, actually the fuel nozzle, and then the car was still up on the air jack. So probably a couple, 2 or 3 seconds lost on that pit stop, but they did manage to get going once again. Also into the pit lane was the Wright Motorsport Porsche. The 16 Trent Hindman brought that in. Let's wait and see who takes it back out. Oh, it is Patrick Long. And he actually, very heads-up driver, waited for the Mazda that was behind. That's the number 55. Ollie Jarvis brought that car into the pit lane, and he should be taking it back out for a triple stint. But Pat, not wanting to get run over by the Mazda, waited very patiently to get into his Porsche. And it's not normally that Patrick Long is patient with Porsches, but he is a championship-winning driver and a three-time winner of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, waiting on the fuel for the right crew, meaning they've done their job perfectly. And come on, fuel nozzle out. Let's go. Patrick's thinking. There we go. And away goes Patrick.
Yeah, but that pit stop was a little bit slow, wasn't it, for the Mazda, because he had to negotiate the Porsche in front of him. It's a little bit unfortunate for the Mazda team. Cost him just a little bit of time on the exit, only a second or two, not really critical at this stage. What was interesting, though, is during that round of pit stops, the number 10 car has got ahead of the number 60. So the two Accus have exchanged positions. It's now Ricky Taylor in the number 10 car, ahead of Dane Cameron in the number 60. Driver changes for both cars, and the change on the track as well now. You see the race leader in, and there's a 21 lap stint for the Mazda, 22 laps, however, for Renko van der Zande in the leading car.
At IMSA Radio, hashtag RSL Sebring. Starting to get some information about the blue with yellow, but nobody has yet told me why the yellow diagonal, sometimes orange diagonal, is there, where it came from. I know it's in the SCCA rules. I've seen it ever since I started coming to America in 98-99. It's just not something we generally see anywhere else. Where did it come from? What did it denote? Or was it just another way of having a blue flag? If you know, send us a message on Twitter. Michelin Post Race Tech, after the checkered flag, we'll give you the opportunity to drive the editorial. Hashtag Michelin PRT. That is now, just over 5 3/4 hours away. New fastest lap in GT Le Mans, 156.0 for Conor De Filippi, as we're nearly 6 hours and 20 minutes into the race. And proof, if any more was needed, that they're still pacing that BMW. Jeremy, really impressive by Conor.
Yeah, very interesting, isn't it? We see the number 24 car has come onto the pit lane, or just made a stop. Yeah, it's just leaving. The number 79 car also into the pits. Cooper McNeil, I would imagine, would be handing over that car now. He's still running in the fourth position in the class. Did a nice job. He was about 30 seconds, I guess, behind the number 24 BMW before this round of pit stops, but doing exactly what he needs to do. And once again, the number 3 car will be staying out for quite a long time yet.
That car is at the moment, how far through its stint is that? 22 laps in, normally get 30 from a GTD, so the Aston's got another 15-16 minutes to go before it thinks about coming into pit. Well, not it thinks, because obviously the car is not a sentient being, you know what I mean? Before Ross Gunn is called in
is
the
it
pit
not
lane.
Not?
Is it what?
Is it not?
No.
I thought cars were alive.
Oh, when you... Yeah, but they're not sentient. You know, you can't... Well, some of them are nowadays, aren't they? Because it takes you 20 minutes to turn all the bits off that you don't need. That hole in the side of the... fifth place... red, white and black prototype that we were talking about earlier on. That's the performance tech car. It's getting worse, the number 38 machine. Exactly as I thought, the airflow getting into that and just starting to peel away the bottom part of the chassis. Now, the problem with that is that right above it is where the rear deck fastens on. Now, the clip is still there, but it's starting to come under pressure and split that panel. And that could be very dangerous indeed if the rear deck started to come loose, and it is starting to wave around even more. It also looks like there's an exhaust pipe on the left-hand side that is shaking loose as well. Yes, there is, and it's sitting very proud out of the back. Now, I noticed there was an exhaust can on the exit of turn 17 ages ago. Is that an exhaust pipe? It might not be an exhaust pipe. It might be some kind of cooling duct. It looked for a moment like it was more substantial than that, but there's certainly some kind of pipework out of the back left-hand side of that car where the damage is ahead of the rear wheel. I'm talking about right on the back of the car. And that my worry there, Jeremy, would be for that rear deck, because that clip is coming under a lot of stress as the bodywork around it is flexing and beginning to tear.
Yeah, particularly by the exhaust exit as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be super hot there as well.
Just trying to see. I think I can hear it scraping the ground as well, the rear clip. That car's coming into the pits. Now, was it due is the question. And that takes me a moment just to... scroll to where I need to be, Jeremy.
Yes, I think so. 26 laps since that car was onto the pit lane.
Yeah, we'll take that. It's about right.
Is the left rear wheel at a jaunty angle?
Say again?
Is the left rear wheel at a jaunty angle?
No, I think that's an optical illusion caused by the fact that the bodywork is really loose. The IMSA official is having a look. One of the pit lane officials is having a look at that piece of pipework that's sticking out the back to see how robust that is and whether it might fall off. And that was, it looked like flexi hose. I thought it was a metal exhaust. So it isn't. But they
can't actually get the left rear wheel off.
Yeah, that's because the bodywork's moving, isn't it, Shea? That's the problem.
Yeah, the bodywork was moving so much that they couldn't actually get the left rear wheel off. And I saw that the mechanic who was back there was actually hitting the air gun to try and get it to function a little bit better. It's caused a couple of people to dive into the pit lane seeing that reaction out on the racetrack. The 88 Team Hardpoint Porsche is in, and Christina is driving once again. Also, the 48, that is the Ally Racing car. Ooh, there's an incident out on track for the 22. That was the next car.
Oh!
That's Jim McGuire straight out of the pits.
Yeah, and pulled right in front of the Whelen Cadillac as he rejoined. He's had a spin at turn 13 at Tower, ended up on the grass on the right-hand side. There's been possibly a little bit of contact. Looks like there's some left damage on the left side at the front of that car, but pulled straight onto the track right in front of, as I say, one of the DPIs, the bright red and white DPI of Pete Modirani, who is absolutely flat out at that point. Yes, there's been contact with the barrier and a couple of the advertising hoardings as well. As he gets his foot down, thank goodness that was coming out of a corner and in an acceleration zone rather than somewhere even faster, because there was no time to react there for people to run. Do you know, Jeremy, I don't think people even lifted there. He just flicked the car to the right and continued to accelerate on. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that would have got his attention, though, I think. Scary moment.
A new fastest lap in GT Daytona. And believe it or not, I'm just going to check this. Oh, it's been usurped. 2:01.0 No, 2:01.607 I was just wondering if Grenier in the Sun Energy One had done another fastest lap, but that was the 2:01.6 was from earlier on with Mauro, I think, behind the wheel of that car. Remember that car with no TC. I'm just keeping an eye because it's doing very well, very competitive with no TC, no traction control. Oh, we dodged a bullet there, didn't we, with that rejoined. Sorry, Shea, go ahead.
Really, who has set the fastest lap?
Was it? Right. In the car. Right, okay, must have shaved a little bit off then.
I think the fastest lap in the class in GTD has actually been set by by the number 14 car with Jack Hawksworth at the wheel, a 2:01.0, is that right?
Correct, I agree. More issues out on the circuit, and that is significant. It's the 60 Acura. Ooh. And the 55. That is Jonathan Bomarito in the Mazda. That was out at turn 15. Both of them way off the track there. 5 hours and 34 minutes to go. There's more drama. That was the third and fourth place cars. Both spinning at that area of the track. Now, was there contact? It looks like Cameron has continued. Yes, he has. Into third position. Still no sign of the Mazda. It's still showing a stationary at that part of the track. Very quick area. Oh, where they got together whilst they were lapping another car, I think. And there was side-to-side contact as they came into 14. It was the Tower Motorsport car in front of the Mazda that went offline, and then there was a touch. Now, was the touch? I think the touch was from the 60 rather, Dean Cameron, rather than from the lapping, the car they were lapping, which was Gabriel Aubrey in the Tower Motorsport car. Difficult to say and apportion any kind of incident responsibility there. We've seen a couple earlier on where race control have basically said inconclusive in terms of the evidence that they have seen. But that, we're still waiting for the Mazda has come round, but lost an awful lot of time that time around. A 2:11.777 and has dropped back into fourth place. Jonathan Bomarito and Dean Cameron now, though, Jeremy, both running again.
Yeah, and it didn't look good there for the number 60 car, I would say. He was just locked up on the brakes. Not sure whether he was trying to think about making a pass there.
Yeah.
He looks like he's kind of caught in two minds, but I think
that's the angle, isn't it?
He's going to be lucky if he doesn't get a penalty for that one.
Yeah, looked like the rear end of the car locked up. The 55 Mazda, Jonathan Bomarito, J-Bom is running again. I wonder if it was a late downshift and he locked up on the downshift as he was braking. He was slightly offline there on the dirty part of the track, trying to take advantage of the number 55 Mazda having been slightly compromised by Gabby Aubrey. First of all, nothing at all wrong with what Gabby Aubrey was doing. He was minding his own business. And I'm not really sure that you can blame Jonathan Bomarito either.
So, he did absolutely nothing wrong.
No. So if there's any blame, then it will go to the 60. Shea Adam, it's been looked at.
There is blame, incident responsibility towards Dean Cameron's number 60 MSR Acura. It's requiring a drive-through.
Yeah. Okay. And well done to race control getting that done quickly. And yeah, just a lock up on the way in and caught the curb on the right hand side.
Cameron, that's for sure.
Yeah, and again, no malice. We're not saying that the, you know, I'm going to barge the Mazda out of the way. Absolutely not. But just a slight misjudgment. And unfortunately, it's had an impact on someone else's race, literally, as well as metaphorically. Oh, he, in fairness to Dane, he did try to jink to the left and miss the contact. But actually, that just kicked him sideways. Bit of bad luck there. But they'll take their punishment as Loic Duval takes out the Mustang sampling car, and here comes Cameron for his drive through. Jeremy Shaw been looking at Lexus. What can you tell us, Jeremy?
Yeah, we talked about it a little while ago. They made a brake change on that car during the early caution period, well, several hours ago now, and it was a bit of a catalogue of disasters, I gather. They had to come in and make some changes. Got a note from Aaron Tielitz to say it was basically a catalogue of errors there, a calamity of errors is how he described it, actually. So that cost them a lap. That is the car that has set the fastest lap of the race, however, but they think they're probably going to need some help here. They're going to need another full course caution to try and get back on the same lap as everybody else. But now the Lexus is running just fine, touch wood, and they are running in the seventh position, is it? What did you do? For a six, seven, eighth position, I think, in the GTD class.
Shea Adams news of another penalty, and this was something we picked up on at the time, and Pete Waterani was nearly involved in this for some quick reflexes from the man behind the wheel of the 31 Whelen Cadillac.
Cat on energy drink, I think is what you like to say. Yeah. Yes, car number 22, which is the United Autosport LMP2 machine being driven by Jim McGuire. Penalty, unsafe re-entry per rule 30.1.1, which means a drive-through.
Don't think anyone can have any kind of argument about that at all, Jeremy.
Sorry, which penalty was that?
The United, the 22 car, when Jim came back across the track.
Yeah, that was close. Let's leave it at that.
Now, another spin. Oh, that was much earlier on. Sorry, that's a replay from earlier on. I can tell that because there's no damage on the side of the 38 there. My apologies. As soon as I look to a timing screen or a message screen. Very good. Coming up to 15 minutes before 5 o'clock. We'll take another Mazda in race update shortly, in the next 10 minutes or so. And the 33 Sean Creech Motorsport car is off at, it's the 83, my apologies, it's the Wynn car that has gone off at turn 13. So that is Tower again. Say again, Shea?
That's Matt Bell. He doesn't make mistakes.
Hang on, so we've seen Bill Oberlin hassled into a mistake this weekend in the Pilot Challenge, and Matt Bell off now at Tower in the car that was sixth in its category. Had run a little higher up that as well. Very odd. Very odd indeed. And there's damage to the left front of that car. It's gone into the triple stack. Well, mate, that quadruple stack of bailed tyres on the exit of turn 13. The right-hander that leads onto that serpentine run before you turn right. If he doesn't move it shortly, I think it will, yeah. Local yellows at the moment. And still local yellows. They'll be talking to the team from race control here and finding out what Matt's saying, Jeremy, about the situation in the car.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. That's exactly what they'll be doing. And if Matt Bell has the engine still running, and if it's not stuck in the tyre wall, then hopefully you can get it back out again. But it's certainly been quite a long period of time, and I think for race control, their patience will be kind of running out fairly fairly soon, because that is a danger point on this racetrack. As you say, there will be waved yellow flags before that turn, but it's been there now for a fairly long period of time, so I'm sure race control is getting a bit concerned. I'm sure the team is saying, yeah, I know, he's fine, he'll be going again very, very soon.
Yellow.
But if he isn't going very, very soon, and indeed now the yellow comes out, so that has brought out our fourth full course caution
after after a 2 3/4 hour run of green, 2 hours and 45 minutes, in which we got up to a predicted 360 laps. That's going to drop back down again, but we are therefore awaiting the arrival of the Corvette C8 safety car. And Renger van der Zander's 30-second lead, Jeremy, will evaporate.
Yes, and this is a very interesting time of the race. This is the number 31 car had... When was that last in? A little while ago.
19 laps ago.
Yeah, so...
Duval has just pitted in the 5, so he'll definitely stay out. So he'll get his lap back properly now in the Mustang sampling car. I think, and Dame Cameron, I was going to say he's only just come out, but that was a drive-through. I think everybody else, I think the top four will pit. Pagenaud might not. He's only been out 6 laps.
True. Alternatively, he might come in just for a splash and just top it off, because his
and get track position.
Good point. A bit quicker than some of the other guys.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think Loic Duval in the Mustang sampling has to stay out and try and get his lap back. And if he does that, that means that if we do the open the pits relatively quickly, then Pete Modirani might be able to get a lap back as well. If it goes on too long, the problem for Pete is that he does need fuel in a couple of laps' time. And then he would have to do emergency service, which would be exactly the wrong thing that they want, because then they'd have to come back in again.
Yeah.
So just because there's a yellow flag out, it has to fall in the right place in your fuel window to get the lap back. And this might be right on the ragged edge of them being able to stretch their fuel and get their lap back, Jeremy, in that one of their 2 laps back in the number 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac.
Indeed.
Tell you what, before any of that changes, let me do a quick rundown. We're a bit early for our Mazda in-race update, but I'll do it now so that everybody has an opportunity, if they want to find out where their favourite cars are before we start doing things like opening pit lane. The tall and genial Geordie, Matt Bell, is out. The man originally from Newcastle-upon-Tyne in the northeast of England.
John, just a quick note here. The number 31 car actually is still 3 laps down.
Okay.
So it's behind the number 01 on the racetrack. And as you say, is due a pit stop pretty soon as well. So
yes.
I think that's just a testament to the pace that Renger van der Zander has been running at the front
very
of this
much
field.
So. Very, very much so. So van der Zander for Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing leads the motor race overall. He's on his 199th lap, so 200 the next time around. It's Ricky Taylor for Acura in second. That's the number 10 black and blue car. Then the white Mazda number 55, despite that spin. And that's good news, because they close back up again after being tipped into the spin. It's even better news for the number 60 Acura for Mershank Racing, because that purple car, remember, did the drive-through and dropped some time, and they will close all the way back up again. As will the Ally Cadillac number 48. And those top five then will be line astern when we restart, because of the way the prototype and DPI split is managed. With a bit of luck and a fair wind, Loic Duval and Mustang Sampling's JDC Miller car will get a lap back. So they will get 1 lap back, and even more luck required for Pipo Turani in the Whelen number 31 red and white car, because they're at the moment sitting 3 laps back, and they're will need fuel shortly. Here's the LMP2 rundown. From 8th overall, Mikkel Jensen leads for PR1 Matheson in the 52 Orica Tower Motorsport. Despite their trials and tribulations, Gabby Aubrey right in the thick of the action a few moments ago in that Orica as well. Then Ryan DL for Aero Motorsports. He'll get to close up the gap in the 18 car. And then it's a 4-3 lap gap to Jim Maguire for United Autosports. GT Le Mans, that's all going to close up again as well, because the top four are all on the same lap. Nicky Katzberg for Corvette leads in the number three. That's the silver car with the red flashes. The bright red number 25 BMW is second. Conor De Filippi, Jesse Kron in the darker coloured BMW with the M Sport Racing stripes is third. And Matthew Jaminet in the WeatherTech Racing Porsche 79 is fourth. LMP3, Spencer Pigot from Stephen McAleer, who is just still on the lead lap for 47 Motorsports. I think they might have been split up in the safety car train with one of the intervention vehicles also out on track at the moment, having picked up Matt Bell and just coming out of turn 17. But that'll all get closed up as we're doing the, we've done the wave by and we're doing the pass around at the moment. Then it's Dylan Murray for Riley in the 91 in LMP3. Then Lance Wilsley in the Sean Creech Motorsport car. Is he a lap further back? I think he is, but I'll wait for them to pack back up again before I give you that definitively. It's two Porsches at the head of GT Daytona. Wright's number 16, the blue and black car, and Lars Kern, the man who holds all kind of production car lap records around the Nürburgring, in the Pfaff Porsche in second place. That's the number nine. Then it's Magnus with Archangel's Acura. They must be due a pit stop shortly as well. There's a few people in GTD who are going to be a bit close here, I reckon. Yeah, Magnus probably only got a couple of laps. And I think the 96 car was on fumes and has, in fact, has just come into the pit lane under a closed pits. That's the Turner BMW. Will have to take emergency service. So behind the Magnus Archangel Acura number 44 in fourth position in GTD is Brian Sellers for Paul Miller Racing in the Lamborghini. Ian James has the Aston Martin number 23 in fifth, and Frank Montecalvo has the first of the two Lexus, who are back together again and on the lead lap with Carl Kirkwood in seventh position. All closing back up again. Christina Nielsen a couple of laps back in eighth position for the number 88 Porsche from Team Hardpoint ABM. I think that's how it stands at the moment.
And what's interesting about that, John, is the number 9 car, I think, was onto the pit lane just before the caution period came out.
Right.
Maybe trying to anticipate it, actually. Number 23 and number 12 also in just a lap before that. And the number 14 car was... This is great news, number 14 car, because because of those other pit stops, that car is back on the lead lap for the Lexus. And number 14, the quickest car on the track and in qualifying, is now back on the lead lap in GTD.
Right. And I think we're going to open the pits this time around for prototypes. So let's see who we have as the takers. My money, as the Turner BMW, by the way, is rolling again, my money would be on the top four going into the pits. Right, well, you see, I've lost my money. So, the leaders come in. Second in line was Loic Duval. Right, okay, that's the car that didn't peel in. Top five have come in. So, the Ally Cadillac has not come in. Loic Duval goes around to get a lap back. Only Jim Maguire of the leading LMP2s coming into the pit lane. Mikkel Jensen's been out there for 14 laps. The second place Tower Motorsport car has only been out there for a lap or two. That's the number 8 car. Gabby Aubrey did a very short stint. Ferrano's got back into that car. Ryan DL's not been out there long either for ERA. Just a 2 or 3 lap before the safety car came out. in theory, the 48 car should get out first because they needed less fuel, and has done. It was Pagenaud from Van der Zande, from Taylor, from Cameron. So the lead taken in the pits by virtue of needing less fuel, therefore standing still for fewer seconds, the Allied Cadillac share, Adam, was first of the cars out of the pits in the DPI category.
It was correct, and the Mazda is still actually showing is in the pit lane. Jonathan Balmerino brought that car in. They've been having all kinds of issues with that car all day, including the radio issue, and then getting a love tap, as race control deemed it, from the 60 MSR Acura. But that Mazda is still in the pit lane. That is reason to concern for me. They do have about another 2 minutes before the pits will open for the GT cars, so they do still have a little bit of time to play with. Further back in the pits, by the way, we also had two LMP3 cars. Well, we had five LMP3 cars, but two of them of note, both of the Riley cars came in. They pit together because they are under the same team. They left together. Spencer Pigot in the 74 and Jim Cox still aboard the 91.
I may have misspoken when I thought that Matt Bell was on his way back in one of the intervention vehicles. So I've just seen a race control message that the 83 with Matt Bell on board has resumed. Oh, no, it'd be the car will be on the back of the flatbed and the transponder will still be pinging. I bet that's what it is. But I'll have a look and see if it is actually on the track. But it's showing back in the pit lane. So let's keep an eye on that. Vagaries of the timing system here at Sebring. GT's coming to you this time, Shea Adam, as the cars that wanted to get their laps back are at the head of the field. And that is the number 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac. And did the 31 must have stayed out. Yes, it did. The bright red car is actually second. I was looking too far down the queue there. Now, who's going to come in from the GTs? Nicky Katzberg's already been out there for 8 laps. Conor DeFilippi for 16. I reckon they've got to come. 7 laps. Do you come and just splash again and do, you know, a stint and a bit on the tyres? Apparently you don't. Katzberg has stayed out in the red flashed Corvette. Shea Adam.
But we do have a lot of takers on the pit lane, including both of the BMWs, both of the leading GTD Porsches are back down the pit lane, as well as the GTLM Porsche. And Spencer Pompelli is thanking his lucky stars that this caution came out and that he is able to get into the pit lane after more than an hour on track during that stint. He is staying aboard the 44 Magnus Acura as they do fuel and 4 tires. Looks like there's a bit of black on the nose that wasn't there earlier on in the race, but Spencer is getting 4 sticker tires. That's always exciting. Short stops for Patrick Long and Brian Sellers. Well, it should have been a short stop for Patrick Long. They've actually put the hood up after they've completed fueling, and they are going to work in the left front area of the car. I wonder if this is a brake change. You don't normally have to do a brake change on a Porsche during the 12
hours.
Exactly
what it is.
Not anymore,
great,
at least.
Great call. They're doing something with the brake calipers. I can only imagine they're putting new pads in at the very least.
And especially when you consider someone with Patrick Long's experience, he would know when you need to have good brakes, particularly for the end of this one. This was the team that won the race, I would say a year ago, but it was November. And yep, there we go. There's the little nifty tool that allows them to do the quick brake change on the pit lane. And they'll put the tires back on. So they're going to lose a lot of track position, but they will have an advantage of new brakes. And looking down the list of drivers, Corey Lewis is now aboard the number 1 Lamborghini again. Roman De Angelis back behind the wheel of the Aston Martin. Lars Kern, we already put into the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche, but they did come back down and do a splash. So that's an interesting change.
And that is Shea Adam with the VP Racing Fuel pit report as we are under the control of the Corvette C8 safety car for the 4th time of asking after a good long run of 2 hours and 45 minutes of green flag racing. You're listening to live coverage of the 69th annual Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring on IMSA Radio.
Racing on America's classic circuit. This is IMSA Radio.